Welcome to the Title League Podcast. I'm your host, Kurt.
And I'm Trish.
And today we're joined by former CFL pro, founder, CEO, and commissioner of the CEBL, Mike Morreale. So looking forward to having him on later today.
It's going to be interesting to see where our discussion goes with Mike. I would say that the CEBL is one of the few, if not only, sports leagues that have managed to pivot through COVID and come out equally as strong as they were before. So be interesting to get some insight from a business perspective of how they were able to manage that and what steps they took to avoid the ruin that we're seeing in some bigger leagues.
The CEBL is only, this is its second season. Last year was the inaugural season. It's an exciting league. It's Canada's league. It is young, it's energetic, it's collaborative, it's innovative. And to see what they've done and pivot, it's just, you know, it speaks volumes to the leadership being agile and making changes in order to make this happen. So what we'll discuss today is really, what does this condensed summer series look like? And more importantly, it's the first professional league in Canada to resume since COVID.
It's going to be awesome. You know, when you said pivot again, I think I said pivot three times. It's going to. Have you ever gone to like one of those business seminars where they do the word cloud? So all of the words that came up are the most frequently used words that came up in the seminar. If 2020 is in a world word cloud, it's going pivot is definitely going to be one of the bolder ones.
Pivot.
Unprecedented pivot, COVID-19, coronavirus, Kanye for president.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely going to be one of the buzzwords. So, you know, I think about our business and how we've changed in the last few months. It's definitely been a time of sink or swim. You know, you could sit there and say, woe is me, the world is in very, very crazy upside down times, but there were ways that you could move forward. And I'm very excited to see the CEBL moving forward. Some of the partnerships that they have with CBC as their their Canadian streaming partner, their partnership with U Sports and allowing student athletes to play at a pro level, that is first of its kind. And more importantly, what they've adopted into the summer series that we're going to see, where they're taking what happened in the NBA All-Star game and not having a time limit in the fourth quarter, but the first to a point system, so there's a game-winning basket.
Which actually made that All-Star game a hell of a lot more fun for me this year, I gotta say. But who knew back then that format would be possibly the only way that we could play sports or the way that we could play basketball moving forward in a professional sense.
Yeah, it is just, again, it's innovative ways to get fans engaged, and it's going to be fun. I mean, I'm looking forward to watching the first game on July 25th. It's only going to stem 2 weeks. We will have single elimination and a champion by August 9th.
That's amazing. And Mike is joining us right now.
Welcome to the show, CEBL CEO and Commissioner Mike Morreale. Mike, welcome to the show.
Oh, great. Thanks for being here. It's nice to be invited.
You know, we've been talking about business in general, business, both sports, other businesses. There's obviously a lot of correlations, a lot of different synergies that cross over. But when you look at pro sports, you guys are going to be the first Canadian league to launch since COVID. What are your thoughts on that, and how have you been able to pull it off?
Well, I don't think we ever aimed to be the first. We wanted to just set our own timetable and ensure that we were doing everything safely. Where we have a distinct advantage is that we are predominantly Canadian. All of our players are in Canada for the most part, about 85% of them. We have brought over our American international players already. They've been here for over a week. They'll continue it to be in quarantine for another week, and then they will join the rest of the teams. But that ability to mobilize our players, the fact that they have been in town, because most of them had to shut down their overseas leagues mid-March, just gave us a leg up in getting people together quickly. And then really it comes down to, you know, the support of the people of Ontario, the people of Canada, for flattening the curve and actually giving us an opportunity to have a chance to come back safely.
Well, and as far as once everyone is together and you guys are ready to start, are you guys going to run a bubble out of St. Catharines?
Yes, we have what we are classifying as three safe zones. So we have our accommodation zone, we have our training center, and then we have our competition venue. So we won't enter into the competition venue until a day or two before the competition starts, which is set to start on the 25th. The remainder of the time will be spent at the hotel and at the training center. So all those areas are off limits to anybody outside of our staff and our players and our coaches and support staff that have gone through our medical testing, have gone through COVID testing, have gone through screening and protocols, just to ensure that there's safety is number one. So we'll be confined to those three distinct areas. And, you know, in dealing with the Niagara Region of Health Chief Medical Officer and other disease specialists and our own medical officers, they're more than happy with our protocols and setup. They're pleased with what's happening and what we plan on doing. And really, mitigating risk comes down to us, you know, working together as players and coaches and everyone to, you know, make sure we're not doing ourselves any damage and maintaining the protocols, respecting them and moving forward, because you're only as good as your weakest link.
Absolutely. And Mike, you know, some of the controversy around the NBA bubble in Orlando, it is the lack of families being able to enter with them and the amount of time that players are going to spend amongst themselves, no matter how much they can entertain themselves on the rides. What are your policies for your safe zones? Are families allowed? Is it typically... Will players be able to enter and exit freely, or once they're in the safe zone, they're there?
Well, to answer your first question, there will be no family members, no outside people, relatives, colleagues, you name it, allowed to enter any of those three safe zones. With the exception, there are some small exceptions for media in the competition venue, and then of course they're segregated and put in areas that are far away from the players. In terms of mobility, players will have some mobility. You have to remember we're entering into a stage three scenario in Ontario, which will give, you know, normal residents, you, me, and everyone else, the ability to get up and move about and go to the store, but they have to follow those safe protocols. So there will be allowed some access to move about and respect the protocols that are in place, but it won't work in reverse where they're coming into our zones. And that just, you know, again, it's on the players to respect that. I know that they are concerned about health and safety, and they were concerned about staying safe. So they're going to police one another, and we're obviously going to police them from a distance and make sure that everybody remains safe.
Absolutely. And that goes back to what you were saying earlier about really thanking the people of Canada, the people of Ontario, public health, to be in the stage three reopening for that province that allows for mobility and allows. It's a very different situation than when you're looking right at our neighbors to the south and the atmosphere that our NBA players are going into that occurs outside of their bubble.
Right. Yeah. The bubble concept is, it makes a lot of sense. It's limiting, of course. They're in a much different scenario. As you mentioned, we're talking about, you know, maybe one or two cases in the Niagara region a day, if that, sometimes none, versus 10, 11, 12,000.
I mean, it's far different
in Orlando. So, I mean, we're talking a lot differently here. Mm-hmm. So the exposure to those players, even within the bubble, you know, can be compromised because of staff going in and out, et cetera. So I can't really speak to that. I haven't read all their documents. I'm familiar with it, of course. We look at ours as a standalone. We worked with specialists that are dealing with our particular regions and areas. So it's tailor-made to what we are doing. They're tailor-making it to what they're doing. We learn from each other. We learn from them. And the same with the MLB and MLS and everyone else. We feel that rather strongly that our patients and our willingness just to, you know, prepare while we waited has paid off for those reasons. You know, public health, people, everybody wants to get back to normal. And sports really provide, it's almost like the benefit or bonus of doing all the things right, is that we're actually allowed to play and fans are allowed to watch us play sports. Not live through the TV sets, but that's because of all the hard work that we all have done.
Exactly. And we want sports back. It's been quite the drought. It's nice to see, obviously, football overseas and the English Premier League and some of the other leagues that have opened up, as well as Formula One getting back to racing last week. And most, I guess, in the sport of basketball, it's funny because we're all thirsty for ball. We've been watching a little bit of the TBT tournament in the U.S. and who would have thought that that would be the only basketball we'd be watching? And it's being streamed, you know, through TSN or Sportsnet in the States through ESPN. So I'm excited to get back and watching. And, you know, just for listeners and fans out there, we'll be able to watch the games, I believe, on CBC. What about people outside of Canada?
So, yeah, there's a few levels to what we're doing. So domestically, you'll be able to watch us on CBC and CBC Gem app and CBCSports.ca. We will also have, you know, seven of those 26 games will be live to air in Canada. And we're also selling those rights overseas as well. But we've worked with CBC that they're going to remove the geofencing on their CBCSports.ca platform, which will allow for anyone in the world to tune in and watch. So
that's
a massive opportunity. So you could be anywhere. You just go on the internet, go to cbcsports.ca on game time. You could pick up our feed. You could watch live. And, you know, that's an incredible opportunity for us.
That's phenomenal. How did they get past CRTC rules on that one?
So that's really their own internal rules. Their GEM app works a little bit different. GEM is restricted to Canada, but their cbcsports.ca platform does have the ability to go outside of the borders. So they're obviously excited about it as well because they're delivering, you know, a product to others on the CBC platform. We're excited about it because of the exposure. And, you know, I think fans, if they get an opportunity to tune in, like I've been tuning into TBT, and it's just expanding your base. Mm-hmm. And we feel really, really excited about that.
You guys are going to put out a great product. Obviously, TBT, very different. But you guys have adopted this year the ELAM ending. So tell us about that. That is was trialed at the All-Star Game last year. It was very entertaining. And I'm sure we're going to see a lot of entertaining game-winning shots this summer.
Yeah, the Elam ending is something I've been working on now for almost 2 years in conjunction with Nick Elam, who created it, and Jonathan Mugar, who runs the TBT tournament. So they've been using it at TBT. This is their third year. They've been in existence for about seven. You know, we've obviously watched and spoke with both of them about, you know, how it impacts the game and what makes it great and what are the challenges and how do you work around it. There are far more advantages than there are disadvantages. I think if anything, it's just a change of mindset. And to me, not being a basketball guy, I look at this completely differently. I look at it from a fan experience, and it's the best way to end the game.
Of course,
bar none,
it makes every game competitive. And at the end of the day, something that the CBL has been very, very forward thinking and made it very known from day one is fan engagement. You want fans to watch. You want fans to get walk away with that feeling of, you know what, I enjoyed that experience. So that is, you know, no one wants to see a blowout. It's boring. So, you know, it's these innovative ways. And when I think of the CBL, I think young, exciting, it's fresh. You guys have been extremely innovative. We talk about some of the partnerships, the U Sports partnership. You know, what league in the world is providing an opportunity for student athletes to play professional basketball while keeping eligibility to stay in school?
None, except for us. So, I mean, if you think about it, it's revolutionary for these kids. I mean, but it goes beyond the kids. It goes to now U Sports in general. Maybe I can retain a kid, give an opportunity to play earlier on the pro level, get exposure, not lose eligibility if he wants to come back, or change his life and move on to pro. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, we hope, and the U Sports programs, the basketball programs, take a look and say, this is an enticing way to attract more players and good players to the U Sports program. The U Sports program have been fantastic. We mandate that at least one U Sport player, a developmental player, which is a returning eligible player or a current year graduate, is on every team's roster. It's important that we develop those players. It's as equally as important as we showcase the other guys that have played overseas for a long, long time, and now they're finally getting a chance to come back home. So if that was it, put it this way, we pay them in a form of an educational grant. So it goes to the institution, helps with their tuition, whatever they want. And, you know, no one loses in this situation. You know, I would love to see the NCAA or somebody adopt a similar rule, because maybe they would, you know, because right now the G League and some of these other leagues are popping up to say, hey, if these guys don't want to go to university because of whatever restrictions or rules or, lack of ability to make money, et cetera, we'll take them. And I think that's going to put pressure on the NCAA, and U Sports was ahead of the curve. And I appreciate that.
You guys are, you stress, Canadian. We're a Canadian brand. Canadian basketball has evolved so much in the last 20 years. You look at everything that's gone our way, from the immigration influx with diversity and Canada not just being known for its as a hockey country. We have tons of young people playing the sport. You pair that with the amount of Canadians that are playing in the NCAA, the amount of Canadians that are playing pro basketball, both in the NBA and overseas. And obviously you pair it with the Toronto Raptors winning an NBA championship and you guys launching this league, allowing pro players to have a place to play in the summertime. Everyone is doing their part to grow this game in this country. And it's just, it's very refreshing to see what you guys have been able to do. So I commend you for that, Mike. It is very, very just rewarding to see our country flourishing. And I'm excited to see what happens in the Olympics next year, because I believe that we have a team that can finally medal.
Yeah, no, and listen, thank you so much for the compliments. It's a strategy that we've stuck to. We wanted to be a new basketball experience, and that's on the court and off the court. We wanted to look at things differently. We wanted to wave the flag and support our Canadian players. You can appreciate this. I look at our Canadian talent in basketball as like an iceberg. We noticed the guys at the top, the NBA guys, were thrilled because they are the second most. We're the second biggest nation of producing NBA talent. But just below that water level are hundreds, if not thousands, of players that are equally as talented, that are, a player or two away from getting an opportunity. So we have to celebrate that. And I hope over time that our fans, and I know our fans do, but more fans jump on the bandwagon, wave the flag, enjoy what we are producing right here in our own country. And that's not to diminish our international players that come, because they're a valued part of what we do. But we want to expand that too. We want to expand international players to beyond North America into Europe and Asia and otherwise, and become a FIBA league that's going to be recognized in the top five of the world. And that's what we believe we can be.
Wow, that's amazing to hear. And I think that is, it's 100% realistic. It's not a pipe dream. It does have the legs to be a recognized league. And you think about just summertime in this part of the world, guys are watching the Drew League or TBT. This year, there's no Drew League, but the CBL provides a professional format that didn't exist before. So as it gets more and more notoriety, the momentum will be it's just exciting to see the momentum steamroll from here. And as far as getting the league together, you come from a sports background. You played in the CFL. You said earlier you're not really a basketball guy. Now you run a basketball league. How hard is it to launch a league? A lot of people think, oh yeah, it's an afterthought, or it's easy, or they think, there's no room for a pro league here in Canada. You see what the CPL has done in the soccer space. You see what you guys are doing in the basketball space. Can you talk to how difficult it is, and now that you've got it off the ground, how rewarding it is to see it actually running?
Well, it's incredibly rewarding to start. I mean, but that's based on the hard work you do at the outset. So, before we tipped off in 2019, we spent, 2.5-3 years building what the business was for the CBL. And it took a lot of time, and it took a lot of investment, and it continues to be a big investment for us. But we had a strategy. We know our space too. We're not competing with the Toronto Raptors, but we know where we fit into the Canadian landscape. And I think once you know who you are, then you can explain to other people who you are easily and simply. And that's part of how we deliver CBL to people. It's easy to understand. It's a Canadian league, and the top players in Canada are playing in it, and they're complemented by the best, U.S. born or international players. And we're here to make an impact in a time of year when it's a downtime for basketball all over the world. So, we don't refer to ourselves as a summer league. We're a league that plays in the spring and summer. So if you look at the Scrub Brothers and all our big name players that have come to play, the Johnny Brahanna Mescales, et cetera, these guys play at the highest levels worldwide. They play in some of the best leagues and get paid quite well to do so. We've brought them all back home for the first time to put their name on the back of a jersey of a city they represent or a country they represent, to start building the dreams for the next generation of basketballers. I'm incredibly proud about that. And that's what I had as a CFL fan and hopeful as I watch my heroes, you know, play for the Hamilton Tiger Cats when I grew up. So that's what I'm trying to create here. I think, you know, we're going to look back and our players are going to look back years from now and say, man, I was part of the start of this and I'm proud of where it is now. And that's just the failure, you know, being scared to fail. You might as well throw that right out the window because you will not last a second. You got to jump in with 2 feet and just go for it.
And you guys make that available and accessible for these pros because you don't compete with the rest of sports in the North American market or overseas. You're not competing with the schedule during the fall through to spring months. You're doing it in the summertime. And I think the coronavirus has also shown a lot of leagues, and I mean the NBA is definitely speaking about it. Why do they not play in the summertime? Traditionally, we've been conditioned over the last, you know, for decades that mm-hmm. everyone goes away in the summer. Viewership's down. You don't want to have a league run in the summer. But you guys have constantly gone against the grain, shown that, you know, we're going to lead the way into the space and we're going to prove that it works. So that is, again, you're able to attract that talent because you're not competing with conflicting schedules.
Yeah, and we recognize that from the beginning. So that was one of our biggest thing is the timing. When are we going to play and where does it fit in? I mentioned the European schedules or the FIBA schedules overseas. It's pretty much wide open. There's no one playing during that time. I think there's someone in Dominican Republic, another one in Mexico, but not major leagues. So we have access to players. So number one is you got to have access to players. And, you know, it's got to mean something to them. So that was incredibly important. And then you work with your venues and your partners. These guys, the venue operators, are dying for stuff in the spring and summer because have empty venues. It makes, you know, there's not much going on other than the occasional concert, maybe some grads and stuff like that. But there's certainly very little or very few sporting events going on. That's because of when everyone else plays. So it allows us to be more fiscally responsible because our lease rates in spring and summer are a lot cheaper than they are in the winter. And then you don't have the conversion rates or the conversion costs of ice to the hard court and back again. It doesn't make sense. And then it doesn't make sense that you're competing, at least for us. We, you know, if we played in the winter, we'd compete against the OHL and the NHL and everybody, even in our own market, selling advertising, selling tickets, it's partnerships, crazy. You know, access to media. So when you really just peel back the layers, you say, well, yeah, it makes complete sense. And for those that won't like the Elam ending and don't like the fact we play in the spring and summer, that's okay. There's a lot more people that do, just like there's a lot of people that don't go to the cottage because they don't own a cottage. Or they, you know, they're looking for something to do.
There's a lot of fans.
Weekends. Yeah. And so, I mean, it's part of the business plan, right? You stick to it, you believe in it, and you just move forward.
There's definitely a lot of fans to go around. It's interesting to see that there, or to hear that there would be some that would complain about that. I think if anything, maybe I'm feeling a bit of a strain now because sports have been gone for so long. But it feels to me that there's never too many sports, or there's never too many things, especially if you have a passion for the game. I want to take us kind of back to football a little bit because you were mm-hmm. a university football player as well before you were in the CFL. So you had a chance. Did you ever have a chance to come out and play the Huskies here in Halifax?
I did not. I played at McMaster in the Hamilton area, so I'm a Hamilton guy. We never did. I had some good friends out there. Some of my very best friends played at St. Mary's, so I was well aware. But in 2004, I did come out the Toronto Argonauts and Hamilton. I was playing for Hamilton at the time. We played at Husky Stadium in an exhibition game.
I was at that
start
game.
Well, there you go. So I managed to make my way out and find the drinking establishments after. As most of you probably know the lower deck.
Oh, you do. Know it well.
So, yeah, I would love to be to have a team in the East Coast. I think mm-hmm. that's part of our plan. I know it's part of our plan. It has to be done correctly and smartly. And I know that the competition for sports in the Halifax area has continued to grow. So it's about, there's only so many dollars. There's only so much time. How do you fit in? And of course, ownership comes into the play and so on and so forth. But that's something that we'll cross when we get there. We want to be patient about it. But certainly my experience with Halifax and the many times I've been there have always been quite good.
Well, happy to hear that. And you knew where I was going with that question of eventually getting ourselves a CEVL team out this way, or even just a little bit closer. Halifax would be my preference, but anywhere in the East we could make work.
you look at the youth sports following. You've been out here for Final yep. Eight, AUS championships for this year, but next year we're coming. Youth sports coming back. There's history. There's roots here in the city, and I'm not sure how familiar you are with the Halifax Wanderers and how well they've done in the CPL, and you know their first season selling out 6,000 seats a game. It's just an example that if it's done correctly, to your point, we have space for it.
Well, and I know Derek Martin, actually another Hamiltonian. So him and I are of the similar vintage. And Derek and his team have done just a fantastic job out there with the Wanderers. I think they created, you know, they did stuff right. They created an atmosphere, right? It's all about the intimacy. It's all about the coming together in the community. I don't think anybody did it as well as they did. I've talked to Derek about CBL in Halifax. We haven't gone down a deep dive, but we certainly have communicated.
The feelers are there.
Yeah, and we will continue to communicate. But in fairness, they're running, you know, business and dealing with this year as well, which is not easy to manage. And we know Halifax is a tremendous market. They got a great venue. There's also a competing league there that plays in the winter. So, you know, it's about finding your space and trying to do it properly. So, you know, will we be out east? Yes. When will we be there? I think it's, you know, safe to say within the next 5 years, but we're managing expectations, and you manage travel and you manage divisions and you manage all these things. But as you may have noticed, we are trending east. We're looking to get into Quebec as early as next year.
Well, Ottawa is your most recent team, right?
That's right. And Ottawa, it came in this year. So in Quebec, hopefully next year as we continue to go. And we're getting closer. But we also have some gaps to fill, you know, in places like Manitoba and elsewhere, adding some teams in the West. So it's a balance of how the business plan rolls out.
So I want to throw something at you guys from you and Kurt both being businessmen. And having that perspective. So you mentioned something about the Wanderers, which is the atmosphere of the game and that vibe that Derek has been able to create. Because I swear to God, when you go to a Wanderers game, you would think that you were in the UK in the Premier League, like just in an established 100-year-old team. You feel as if this team has been around as long as the province has been around, and we have been vested in this sport and this team for that long. And when you look at other organizations, no matter what the sport is and no matter how popular a sport may be, if that atmosphere isn't created, there's only so much that fans can bring to a team, right? So, and I don't know if I'm explaining myself properly, but I don't, from a business perspective, how much emphasis do you think should be put on the atmosphere that is in how a team is packaged? In my opinion,
all of it. I think basketball is the easy part, you know, rolling out the basketball and have these guys play, no problem. I don't have to teach them how to do it. I don't have to do anything specifically to make that more exciting. I know we have some rule tweaks, of course, that adds to it, but those are all aimed at the viewer or the fan in the stands, and it has to be. So we every market's slightly different. In Saskatoon, you'll get maybe a more rock and roll meets basketball market. And in a different environment, you'll get, you know, a more of a different musical thing or different fan base. And it's, you have to cater to it, but it's all about creating intimacy, creating those touch points on and off the court and into the community, because you're only as good as kind of these guys being visible and being helpful. You can't just expect people to buy tickets, but not give anything back. And you have to be entertaining. So our game is all about entertainment. It's the music, it's the mascots, it's the drum lines, it's everything that the Wanderers have done, yeah, right outside of soccer. And that's what people come, you're selling entertainment. We're competing against the Cineplex Odeons of the world, right? Not just sports leagues and teams. So that's incredibly important.
You're selling the entire package. And we just recently had Josh Okoji on the show, and he's a musician as well as an NBA player. Mm-hmm. So we had a conversation about, I'm a music person, Kurt's the sports guy, I'm the music nerd. But like it happens quite often where these two worlds collide and how they are so intertwined with one another. And to me, what you said, that whole package, that experience, the basketball is the easy part, but making sure that you are looking at the right audience and using the whole atmosphere to make people want to spend their money, right? Like, so especially, so we'll use Nova Scotia as the example. We have access to soccer, basketball, hockey. Now, hockey has always been a very natural fit for us. We have the queue, so we see a lot of people, a lot of players who get called up to the NHL, and it's exciting to us. And that's been the history of this province for decades, right? Depending on, no matter what the league was that was here, but there was always a team that you could then go watch your local, you know, hometown boys go play on the CBC on Hockey Night in Canada. So, so what has happened in other sports is that they've tried to create that hockey atmosphere that wins and apply it to a different sport. And that is not the right formula for basketball. That is not the right formula. That is not going to get the fans or keep the fans in the stands, right? And what I love about what Derek has done in terms of the Wanderers is that he has, it's almost as if the Wanderers are the very first sports team to ever come into Halifax, because he has not looked at anything that has been done before and has based it entirely on what the culture of soccer fans is, and he's created that. And I think that there's a lot of lessons to be learned there, because we kind of go, we fall victim to like the easy way out of, oh, well, you know, the Mooseheads games get sold out, so we're just gonna put a new sport in place of what we do here, and then question why it's not successful or people aren't having a good time. But even in college basketball or college sports, I think about St. Mary's games. I think about going to Husky Stadium as a university student. Now, yeah, they were winning years, right? This is the Vanier Cup of the 2000s, right? So this is, so it was fun to go watch football games. But the atmosphere between how St. Mary's packages their sports teams and that experience, that fan experience, is very different than a lot of other universities across the province. So it's always surprising to me when you don't see, because at the end of the day, you're trying to make money. You want people to come. You want people to enjoy your business. So it's interesting to me how few business people put enough effort into the atmosphere and the experience of coming to watch a team play and just say, okay, well, as long as we have good players, then that's good enough.
Yeah, I think the experience can't be an afterthought. It has to be the forethought. It has to be everything. And, you know, you have to cater it to your markets and to your clientele. So perfect example, I mentioned about Saskatoon. Their basketball knowledge is not the same as the basketball knowledge of our fans in Edmonton. Our Edmonton fans are extremely smart as it relates to basketball, because Edmonton's been a basketball hotbed for a long, long time, going back to the early days of the women's leagues that started there. So it's much different in that respect. But, you know, we launched this year, and it's how we operate. But we, for a while, a platform called CBL Life. And CBL Life is music, art, culture, fashion, because that's what basketball is. It's all-inclusive, it's transparent, it's multicultural, it's music, it's art, it's fashion, it's the experience. So that's what we do. And, you know, I can tell you, I had to field, you know, several complaints last year about, you know, the music during the game. People wanted to hear the shoes. And by people, it was usually, you know, older gray haired men. We can't cater to everybody. We're catering to the mass population. Not everyone's going to like the fact that there's music, you know, playing. I can tell you our broadcast and what you'll see during the summer series is going to be like what you see at a regular game. Now, we won't have all the pomp and circumstance, of course, because there are no fans in the stands, so it's hard to replicate some of that, but there will be music played throughout. It'll be piped into the broadcast. So, you know, it's not just going to be hearing the squeaks of shoes and the emptiness. It's going to be a combination of how we play basketball in the CBL.
And as far as fan engagement and experience, since we're unable to attend live events or watch sporting events live, we'll be watching on television. Are there some other innovative ways that you will be engaging with fans? Obviously, you see what TBT has done with fantasy. Is that something that you guys have explored?
We have fantasy is a little bit different here. It's not quite as easy to replicate as it is in the U.S. We are looking at you know, different platforms that have come out that are texting platforms where fans can actually engage, and those voices can be heard even within stadium. It's still a little premature because obviously these are rushed, right, because of what's happening.
Yeah.
So it's more about not if we can use it, is can we use it successfully? How does it integrate with our game and make sure that the experience makes sense? Or you don't want to do something that's not perfect. So, but there's other little innovations, of course, as it relates to, you know, refereeing even. So the use of an electronic whistle versus a normal whistle. You don't want officials going from a ball to their whistle to their mouth to the, you know, it doesn't make sense. So we'll be implementing the electronic whistling system, which will probably in due course become the way everybody does it.
Sure.
And there's other, you know, there's a ton of health protocols, but in terms of the broadcast portion, we want to bring you closer to the players, closer to the coaches. We want you to hear in the huddle. We want you to get to know our guys more and build their brand and know the CBL more, whether it's human interest stories and other things. And the TBT does a pretty good job. I watch it for those types of things. How do they describe the Elam ending? How do they, what does their intro, you know, video to TBT look like? How do they explain who they are and what they do? It's in a lot of man hours. We won't be perfect. I want to do this many things, and
of course,
we might be able to do this many things. It's just the way it goes.
It's still impressive in year two what you guys have accomplished. So,
right. That we'll continue to push the boundaries as much as we can, but I want to make sure the product is top notch.
Perfect. So, summer series, what can we expect?
Well, listen, it's when you look at the competition itself, we have seven tremendous teams, right? They're going to be playing against each other once, so every team's going to have six games in a round robin. I anticipate that not only will win and lose records be important, obviously, but point differential is going to be massive, because I think we're going to get maybe a one or two distinct guys out ahead, but we may have five guys, teams that are lumped in the middle, and we may have to decide between points who goes here, who goes there. So that's what's really important about Elam too, is because Elam kind of caps, you know, the target. Now you can go above the target depending on where you're at before you take the shot, but where does that team, you know, the trailing team, they need to score buckets, right? Because they need to, even if they lose, they need to lose closely.
That's right.
So that's going to be interesting. Anybody can win. We saw that last year in our playoff format, which again is single elimination. So we'll eliminate the seventh team, and then we'll move into our quarterfinals, which are with our bottom four. One and two will get a bye to the semis. Winners will meet in the semis, and then the winners, of course, will meet in the championship. But, you know, last year the Rattlers they were a fifth seed.
And they ended
up winning the whole tournament. They got hot at the right time. They did all the right things. And I think that's what's keeping our coaches up at night, that it's like, man, it's a sprint, and it every game counts. And I think every point may count too.
It's going to be very entertaining because you don't have a lot of time. We're talking about a short window, and we're going to have one winner August 9th, I believe, right?
Yep.
So it's gonna come. It's gonna go really, really fast. But the work doesn't stop there. So once we do have a champ for this summer series, what does the next few months look like for you guys, and what can we expect going into 2021?
Well, in a perfect world, we're ramping back up for 2021, which we will be. We still are now faced with the fact, okay, what's 2021 going to look like? Is there going to be, you know, social distancing in the stands? How do we do our seat maps? I mean, all these little things that you don't think about in a normal situation, we have to plan for. But there's very little time off. You know, we're typically ending when we would have last year or this year anyways. We had scheduled our championship weekend for the 14th, 15th, 16th. So we're going to end on the 9th, not too dissimilar. So we're going to follow kind of the same off-season path, and that is reevaluate what happened in year two, look at ways that we can, you know, tweak our business plans and for our teams and for the league, and then just ramp back up and get into year three. And it'll come before you know it, at least for us it will. But we do have to navigate a lot of factors that are still out of our control.
Of course, of course. Well, we're looking forward to it. I'm excited to share this episode with all of our listeners. We encourage all fans, not just Canadians, but if you want to watch entertaining basketball, tune in July 25th onwards to the CEBL. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'll pass it over to Trish.
All right. So we like to finish each interview that we do with three just fun questions. We don't want you to think too hard about them. Just give the first answers that come to mind. So the first one is, if you were to write your autobiography today, what would you call it?
No risk, no reward.
Love it. Who would you get to play you in the movie?
That's a good question. Let's see. Troy Aikman. People always say you look like Troy Aikman.
I would have gone Dean Cain.
I wish I had his wallet.
I would have gone Dean Cain, okay. but Troy Aikman, we can make that work too. and if there's one TV show, either past or present, that best describes your life right now, which one would it be?
Oh my goodness, SCTV. That's what it feels like some days.
That's amazing. Wow.
Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure, man. I appreciate the time. We bounce from personnel to players every week. So we go from NBA players to just personnel in the basketball world. So, you know, most recently we had Rob Covington. We had Tariq Sabit from North Pole Hoops. We had Josh Okogie, and now we have you. So the perspectives are always very different, but very alike, obviously, in the sports world. So we appreciate you making the time to come on today.
Well, listen, I gotta congratulate you guys, man. You have done not too dissimilar to what we have done. It's just grind it out and just say, I know there's people out there that are interested in this stuff. You do it very well, but continue to do it because we have to stay together. So, you know, when I talked, you mentioned Tariq and all those guys, we're only as good as in basketball, the relationships we make, right?
Exactly.
And too often we go in our silos. And the one thing that I noticed, again, from looking from the outside is we need to get together. Like, collectively, this is going to be tough to beat any of us. So all the work you do, I know it. I recognize it.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.